And we are the Nonprofits, coming at you live from Dillahunty National International Studios here in lovely Austin, Texas. We are sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of church and state. And today, we have a very special double date episode for you as two engaged couples do the show. That would be me, my fiance Linnea.
Hi.
Matt.
Hello.
And Matt's breaking news fiance, Beth Presswood.
Hey.
So, yeah, we had to make up for Dennis not being here today. So I just went ahead and said, let's get married and we'll do the show as engaged couples.
That was kind of a drastic action to take right there. But
cool. Dennis is that awesome.
Congratulations, so. Guys.
Yeah, we got to make up for Dennis as best we can. He's home sick, and
our prayers go out for him.
Yeah, they go out, and they just kind of stay out there doing nothing, hanging around. So, yeah, we moved the show up an hour earlier today because...
My fault.
Nah, not just your fault. There's a lot going on here, and so I was actually originally about canceling it, but we canceled last week, and I don't want to get in the habit, so... since we're trying
we've been in that habit for way too long.
Yeah, it's really, for those who don't know, I mean, all of us have jobs, and then there's the TV show, and then there's all the other stuff we do, and so trying to do this every Saturday is not always easy, but we'll do what we can.
Exactly. And so I guess we can launch straight into news.
Let's get busy.
All right. Our fuckface governor of Texas here...
Yeah, almost got rid of him.
Yeah.
We actually did come surprisingly close to electing Bill White, but sadly we've still got Rick Perry, which is why we still have to put up with this. Rick Perry prevailed upon Republicans to withdraw their children from the state's elementary and secondary public schools while giving a keynote address to a group of Texas conservative business leaders at a recent U.S. Chamber of Commerce luncheon in Houston. While reluctantly admitting that Texas faces fiscal challenges, the governor refused to acknowledge a $30 billion deficit. It seems that Texas does not do shortfalls, much less deficits, but Mr. Perry did concede that the budget was such that school funding would be deeply cut. The governor assured those present that the solution to the school budget crunch is the creation of more affordable private Christian elementary and secondary schools. He says, "Now I know most of you present here have already enrolled your children in some of our state's finest private schools, all you rich donors, but I want to make private schools more accessible to Republican Christian families that cannot afford to pay high tuition and for those who cannot homeschool their children. In a city like Houston, private school tuition can cost between $10,000 to $25,000 per year per child."
Wait, did he actually say that Republican Christian children?
That's what I'm reading.
Republican Christian children. Not only is he supposed to be governor of everybody, but and he's focused on Republican Christians.
I think he was speaking specifically to what was it?
The Republican Christian Children's Group.
U.S. Chamber of Commerce luncheon in Houston. So actually, despite the neutral sounding name, I think that is a pretty right wing group. So, I mean, yes, he's playing to the base right here. This is the best part, though. When he talks about justifying cutting stuff from schools, he said, "Well, there is a lot of fat to cut from our public schools, especially those in our biggest urban areas like Houston and Dallas. I'm concerned that some of the highly diversified magnet public schools from this city are becoming hotbeds for liberalism. Do we really need free school bus service, Black History Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, Asian Pacific Heritage Month, English as a second language, and special needs and enrichment programs like music, art, or math Olympiad? I think we should just get back to the basics of the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. I mean, when is the last time a sixth grade science fair project yielded a cure for a disease?
Wow. Yeah, I read that the other day, and wow. So we don't need art or science.
And we don't need science, apparently, or math. That's a special interest. Well, he said
well,
math.
Well, that's arithmetic.
Yeah,
so, right. So as long as it's only arithmetic.
Yeah,
and
if you
else.
Stop at arithmetic, that's fine.
That's fine.
You know,
that's
some of that
need.
Fancy stuff like trigonometry and calculus. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, that's just inviting the devil in.
As long as you can do tips, that's all. That's all the math you'll ever need. You know.
Yeah, to make sure that they're tipping you appropriately.
Yeah, because
I don't think you get tips at McDonald's.
School children are good.
Not to hack on people who work at McDonald's, because
tips.
Yeah.
What are you, some kind of elitist ivory tower egghead?
So we don't need
percentages.
Christian, what? Beth's got something. Are you ready?
I think Feringula posted on this, and it ended up being fake. I'm trying to find that now.
Oh.
That would be nice. Well, for
I don't think so, because I'm not reading it from Feringula. I'm sorry, I got to follow it back to the original source.
I remember reading it and thinking it was so outrageous that it had to be. It just couldn't be real.
Well, I know something that is real. Did you know that our Texas textbooks are anti-Christian and pro-Islam?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So the State Board of Education has approved going back
shit.
Against the pro-Muslim bias. So they're getting rid of all of the pro-Islamic stuff that is just rampant in Texas textbooks. I mean, you can't read any textbook without reading, you know, a law says that
I remember,
plus two is four.
Yeah, I remember just the
son
other day.
Son of a bitch, I've been reading satire. Beth got me.
There we go.
I am so sorry.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's okay.
It happens to all of us.
And the thing is that we caught it, and it's an example of Poe.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, when I heard it, I was like, I know that Perry is in the nearly batshit crazy category.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe that anybody would be dumb enough to actually say that.
I don't know. Can you believe someone would be dumb enough to say that Texas should secede now?
Well, yeah. he's my understanding is that he hasn't said that we should secede. It's just that he's been linked to people who think we should secede.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the whole secession thing's kind of moot. It's not going to happen. It's never going to happen.
Well, it's true.
But in any way, in any way I can, I will continue with a segue.
All right.
High school biology teachers are reluctant to endorse evolution in class. Now, this is legit.
Oh, yeah. This one is true.
The majority of public high school biology teachers are not strong classroom advocates of evolutionary biology, despite 40 years of court cases that have ruled teaching creationism or intelligent design violates the Constitution, according to Penn State political scientists. Considerable research suggests that supporters of evolution, scientific method, and reason itself are losing battles in America's classroom. They found that only about 28% of the teachers consistently implement the National Research Council recommendation calling for introduction of evidence that evolution occurred and craft lesson plans with evolution as a unifying theme. In contrast, Berkman and Plutzer found about 13% of biology teachers explicitly advocate creationism or intelligent design by spending at least 1 hour of class time presenting it in a positive light.
So the result of the various court cases has been that you can't teach creationism legally and you can't exclude evolution legally, but what has happened socially, and I experienced this myself in high school, is that teachers, rather than deal with the controversy, will just hide from it as much as they can.
Yeah. There are teachers who, let me stick to whatever lesson plan there is so I can get through this, and just I'll do this disclaimer of you're required to know this for the test, and now we're done. And then there are evidently in a lot of the more rural areas, they just avoid it entirely. It's like the kids just aren't even getting a basic introduction.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a shame because evolution really, it's not an exaggeration when they say that it is the cornerstone of biology, or as one of those famous guys said, biology without evolution is just butterfly collecting.
Yeah. And also, next week, is it Friday? Is Darwin Day?
Oh, okay.
February 12th?
I'll believe it.
In which we worship our Lord and Savior.
Yes. I have my monkey tea light statue around here somewhere, and we will pray to Lord Darwin, who delivered us from the truth.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel bad, though, for all of these people in high school who aren't getting this good education. Because I remember from my biology teacher was pretty Christian. And, I mean, some of my teachers I didn't know. But I remember knowing that my biology teacher was Christian. And I can't really remember what kind of evolutionary education I got. And I remember not getting evolution until I got to college, and then it was just explained in the Selfish Gene chapter, and it just made so much sense. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, oh, well, that was really simple. You know, I'm surprised I didn't know that until then. And I wish that was more the case.
That was exactly my experience, and I think I've told this story before, but the only high school biology class I took was freshman year, and to me it was just completely uninteresting, just a set of random unconnected facts. And my dad kept telling me, when you get to the chapter on biology, everything will make sense and become interesting.
Evolution.
Evolution. And we got to the chapter of on evolution, and we skipped right over it, and my dad raised hell. And I think they put it back in for future classes, but I didn't really study evolution until I got to college and then deliberately enrolled in a whole class on it. And sure enough, it's really interesting. I mean, it's exactly the kind of problem solving that I love as a techie guy, because it's all about, you know, gene frequencies and probabilities and how something sort of logically follows instead of just being body parts that you have to name.
Like Spore. Yeah, Spore's not that great. As an aside, I had the same sort of thing happen to me with sex ed, because I had physiology, which is, you know, even more awesome biology, which is kind of surprising that didn't go into evolution. But there was a whole chapter on the physiology of sex organs, and she skipped over that. And I even went and I asked her about it. I said, why are we skipping over this? You know, I want to learn about this. And she said, well, you already get that from your health class. And I was like, well, I don't know. But she was the teacher, so I couldn't really argue. So I feel like there's all of this, whenever there's kind of a difficult subject, the teachers just say, you know, I don't want to deal with it. And they have the authority to do that, really.
Well,
but we shouldn't allow that to happen.
I wonder if part of that discomfort with dealing with it comes from their own lack of proficiency on the subject.
Yeah,
you think
I'm
it's
sure.
A vicious cycle of some sort?
Yeah, well, I mean,
well, I don't think it's proficiency, because it's just, you know, the same thing as any other system. You just need to know the parts and how they function. I think it's just the moral implications or something like that.
Or some embarrassment about talking about naughty bits or something.
Yeah, embarrassment.
They just don't want to deal with all the parents.
Yeah.
That may be the case.
Yeah, and same thing with evolution. I mean, if you are teaching evolution, you will be teaching something that is scientifically accurate and important. But you will get a bunch of lunk-headed creationist parents storming the schools and demanding that you give some sort of equal time. And most teachers just want to teach stuff, and they are not equipped to get into the kinds of arguments about evolution that, I mean, heck, it took each of us who appears on the show and argues against creationists, it took us years of reading stuff to handle that well.
Yeah. So we've got, despite the quote from Governor Perry being, you know, satire.
And sorry again.
We do have a lot of problems in our education system in the United States. It's no secret. We've talked about the issues with the Texas textbooks, which are continuing even under the new board. And I highly recommend anybody who's interested go to Texas Freedom Network to get more information from them. They're an excellent watchdog organization about what's going on with the State Board of Education and textbooks. And education in Texas generally, which affects people outside of Texas.
And did you mention that local people can actually sign up right now to be speakers again?
No, I didn't.
Were you aware of that?
Nope.
I'm going to have to dig that up then.
But one of the things that happens, you know, we were talking about how teachers don't necessarily want to deal with this. We are building a culture that is not only ignorant, but often... I mean, we complained before about willful, gleeful ignorance, the people who kind of rejoice in their own stupidity. There are others who aren't really rejoicing in their ignorance. They're blatantly ignorant, and they think they're not. They think that they've got, you know, that they know as much as anybody else. And an excellent example of this is a video that was sent to me, I don't know, a dozen times yesterday, which I'm just going to go ahead and play. You only need the audio from it. Oh, and yes. It's Bill O'Reilly, who, after saying his tides go in, tides go out, there's never a miscommunication thing.
Never a miscommunication.
Was pretty much just ripped to shreds all over the world by a bunch of people who he calls pinheads. And so this is Bill's response to them.
David, Beverly Hills, Florida. What do you mean when you refer to the tides, when you ask about the existence of God? Science explains the tides, the moon's gravity.
He has no response.
Okay, how'd the moon get there?
I think
how'd the moon get there? Look, you pinheads who attacked me for this, you guys are just desperate. How'd the moon get there? How'd the sun get there? How'd it get there? Can you explain that to me? How come we have that and Mars doesn't have it? Venus doesn't have it. How come? Why not? How'd it get here? How did that little amoeba get here? Crawl out there. How'd it do it? Come on. You have order in this universe. You have an order in the universe. Tide comes in, tide goes out. Okay, yeah, the moon does it. Fine. How'd the moon get there? Who put it there? Did it just happen? Okay, if we have existence, if we have life on Earth, how come they don't have it on the other planets? Well, we just...
I got feedback from trying to let everybody else listen to it. That's about as much as I actually can stand and need to.
How can you explain that?
So Bill understands that the moon causes the tides, but where'd the moon come from?
And
why doesn't Mars have that? Mars has two, you dumbass, first of all. Mars has two moons. And the reason that there's not, human-like life on any of the planets in our solar system is because they don't have the necessary conditions for life as it is on Earth to have evolved. But that doesn't mean that there isn't life of another kind, and it doesn't mean that there's not life on some other planet in the millions of potentially viable planets within even just our within our galaxy, which, by the way, the Kepler system has identified a whole bunch more solar systems with planets in the habitable zone, including some that are potentially Earth-like. Now, it doesn't mean...
You know, there are a billion stars, and there are a billion planets around them or something.
So, yeah, it's not like we're saying that, you know, aliens are running rampant around the universe, but they may be. But Bill's sitting here and just, I mean, he starts with an argument from ignorance. The tide goes in, the tide goes out, therefore God, because you can't explain it. And then you provide an explanation for the tide. Okay, the tide goes in, the tide goes out because of the moon. You can't explain the moon, therefore God. Well, actually, we have a number of explanations for the moon. Including an impact crater that, you know, broke off a chunk. The sun, you can't explain the sun. Yeah, actually, we do have a pretty good understanding of how stars form and the solar systems from the accretion disks. But you can't explain where life first came from. Well, we kind of can. We don't necessarily know exactly how it happened in this particular instance, but there are scientists who are actually out there working on the problem and coming up with answers.
Yeah.
And people like Bill O'Reilly are, they can't at this point be unaware.
Mm-hmm. Apparently they can.
I mean,
it's not just a case of willful ignorance. It's a case of being enthusiastically looking for ignorance. I mean, you know, embracing ignorance. Because, and, you know, it's always going to be successful to go looking for ignorance because everybody knows that human knowledge is not infinite. And so Bill O'Reilly could start by saying, you know, you can't explain where rainbows come from. And then we could say, yeah, well, actually, it's light refracting on water. And he's like, well, where does the water come from? You can't explain that. And, you know, it's just a two-year-old saying why over and over again.
Yeah.
Eventually, you're going to get to a point where we've reached the limits of our knowledge.
Yep.
And
yep.
The theist answer to that is to shoehorn God in there.
Yeah, so there is a danger to answering these claims of ignorance, therefore God, with the answers, because eventually you will get to the point where it's just ignorance, and it doesn't matter if you're ignorant about it. You know, you still can't say therefore God. So even I appreciate even more now the answer of the president of that atheist group who did not explain how the tithes work, but just said it doesn't matter.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know what
David
Silverman.
Silverman, yes,
because, which is how this crap all started.
Yeah. Bill O'Reilly's done it several times, but I'm glad that this is the time it finally stuck. And the second message that I'm getting from this is that this is one of the few, if the only time that I've ever seen Bill O'Reilly respond to criticism about himself. So I feel like all of this, you know, ignorance bashing, making fun of all of the dumb stuff that he's saying is kind of something that's working, because he is having to say, you know, he's having to backtrack.
Well, you know, years ago, like sometime in 2003, 2004 is when Media Matters launched, which, by the way, I think is a great site. And it goes after Bill O'Reilly a lot, and the response from Bill O'Reilly and the right has been to basically slander it and say, oh, this is just a smear-mongering site. You know, never actually respond to it substantively, but just say, you know, oh, these are smear merchants who are trying to smear me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I find it important to defend that site because largely what they do is not so much editorialize, although they do that, some of that too, but they just collect massive amounts of bullshit and highlight the things that are most bullshit. And I think it's a valuable service, MediaMatters.org.
Yeah, but I think Linnea is absolutely right that this is a good example. This whole thing with accommodationists has been just been going crazy, and Jerry Coyne dealt with another example of this on his blog yesterday, where there's another person who's accusing the new atheists of just being dicks. And there's been a lot of, I highly recommend everybody go over to Why Evolution is True, his blog, and actually check it out, because there's good discussion there and there's some posts from people. But there are, as I've said, all of us have pointed out for years now, ridiculous ideas are deserving of ridicule, by definition.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean you have to use ridicule. But it also means that when you've reached your limit, when you've tried the nice approach of, well, okay, sorry, maybe Bill's just unaware that we understand how the tides work.
I'm pretty sure that he was unaware of it and then backpedaled.
Well, ridicule works. And one of the things is that it doesn't necessarily belittle the person. It's not necessarily an attack on the person, because the entire reason for it's not like if I say that, you know, somebody's an idiot or they're being an idiot about something, I'm not assessing their entire character there. But Francis Collins, brilliant scientist, dumb as a post when it comes to Christianity. I mean, it's just the way it is. So when I talk about him being stupid about something or idiotic about something or moronic about something, I'm just within that little context. And there are plenty of things on which subjects on which I'm an idiot. I'm ignorant, and I'm also stupidly mistaken about some things. I'm absolutely sure of it. The difference is that I don't mind so much being told, and if there's, you know, a good argument to be made, okay, fine. And, you know, if you want to call me stupid for not getting it, okay, fine. I mean, I it would be hypocritical for me to say, you shouldn't do that, you can't do that. It works. It is effective. It is not the first line strategy. It's not the first thing that any of the new atheists are doing. It's not like we're going after the NCSE and saying, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Why are you, you know, are you a bunch of idiots? You guys are just too stupid, blah, blah, blah. We don't want anything to do with you anymore. Yep. It's kind of a way of saying, here's a problem. And Jerry Coyne addressed it, I think, probably better than anybody, which is that the new atheists have a goal with two faces. One is the promotion of reason, and the other is the elimination of irrationality. And the most dangerous form, most dangerous ubiquitous form of irrationality is religion. There's just no, I can't think of anything that is more, not only more harmful, but more potentially harmful.
I think it's somewhat to our advantage, actually, that religion has been insulated for so long on the grounds that, well, it's just faith, you can't criticize it. Because yeah. I think that, in a way, that has weakened its immune system. People have gotten used to not having serious challenges to their faith. So when you listen to apologetics, they're largely really, really bad to anyone who kind of knows what they're talking about.
Yep.
And Bill O'Reilly saying that we don't know anything about the moon, you know, that's a prime example, because he could have been allowed to just get away with that, and then people
and
would come away with the impression. What?
He did for quite a while.
Yeah, for years.
Yeah.
Until Stephen Colbert got Neil deGrasse Tyson to come on and edumacate him. No, I think you're absolutely right. It's one of the best points on the subject. It's something you should probably put together as a blog post for the Atheist Experience.
I'll think about it.
This idea about looking at it as kind of an immune system, because we get email quite frequently from people, Christians, by and large, who want to criticize us because of the people who call into the show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you guys get real apologists?
Yeah, it's not fair that you pick on those hapless people who are just amateurs. Why don't you call William Lane Craig?
Yeah. And as I was explained before, it's because, first of all, we don't make outgoing calls, but also William Lane Craig is welcome to call in, as did Matt Slick. But curiously, all of these people who write in seem to think, oh, these people who are calling, they're not making the good arguments. They're not representing my beliefs well enough. And when I ask them, well, why don't you call in?
Yeah, let's see you do better.
Some of them will just straight up front admit that they couldn't do better, which,
I mean, you know, sometimes you just can't. Sometimes you get nervous or something.
Sure. Although, I think that there's a kind of a point to be made that if you recognize that somebody isn't doing a good job of defending your beliefs and you can't do better, maybe you should be reconsidering your beliefs a little bit.
Okay, I will admit that there are, you know, that if you just cherry pick the absolute best apologists in the entire country, I could probably go up in a debate against, say, William Lane Craig and lose, because William Lane Craig does this for a living. He could probably, you know, beat me rhetorically. He could probably throw out stuff that I couldn't think of how to respond to on the fly. I do think that, like, you know, somewhere in the 95th percentile of apologists, I could beat just about everybody.
Yeah, I think it's actually higher, and I think you're selling yourself short.
Yeah.
Because if you go watch Craig's debates, he does the same thing every time.
He infuriates me, and a lot of the time I'm not sure exactly what I would do in that situation, even though, you know, I can think out a good response over, like, an hour.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you kind of go in preemptively, because what he does in his opening statement every time is to try to switch things around and put the burden of proof on the atheist by running up and making claims about, you know, the everything from nothing, and he lays out his kind of kalam in order to shift the burden of proof.
Right, but the thing is, what I'm saying is, a pretty good, pretty well-read atheist can lose mainly to the absolute cream of the crop best apologists in the country. And that shouldn't be a big surprise, but the average rank-and-file creationist really sucks at it.
Well, there's also this... Go ahead.
They throw out a lot of bullshit, though. And
they
then,
do, yeah.
And that can be tough to respond to.
Yeah, the Gish Gallop. There's also... I don't think it's probably a good idea to look at it in terms of winning or losing.
Right.
Because if you poll people before and after debate, very few times are you going to find that people's minds have seriously been changed. And it's usually about a subject that is kind of clear-cut that they weren't aware
of. Here's how I would define winning or losing is in a debate they often ask before and after, what did you think coming in, and have you swung over afterwards?
Yeah.
If, let's say, 95% of the audience came in being creationists and 90% came out being creationists, that is a huge win.
Sure. In the context of this whole winning and losing thing, just for example, the debate that I did with Father Jacobsy. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think it's any secret that I left the debate at least reasonably happy with what I'd done. It was 400 and some odd people there, and the majority of them seemed to be on my side, at least at the end, if not from the beginning. But it's not like we did any polling, and it's not like we cared to do the, who's the winner of the debate. It was more of a presentation thing. And curiously, I went and listened to, somebody sent me a link, he did an interview with an Orthodox podcast. And they were sitting around talking about how clearly he won the debate and how unprepared I was and how I didn't seem to have thought about the subject at all and didn't seem to be able to make coherent points. I don't know what debate they were at. But that's not the impression that I left with.
As long as they can get themselves into their little insulated room where the only people there are people who agree with them. Oh, hey, look where I am. But
Yeah.
We're in our little insulated room, so I guess But when I say, and during the debate, I was desperately trying to clarify what both of the sides were. And my position, because the debate was on the subject, was the source of morality.
Right.
And my position was that the source of morality is reason. And he, after meandering about talking about history and other stuff and just forgetting that he was even supposed to ask me a question, we got to a point and I was like, so I'm not sure I'm understanding what you're advocating, because I'm advocating reason and you seem to be advocating reason plus without offering any explanation of what the plus is or why anybody should adhere to it. And meanwhile, he completely agreed that an atheist can come by correct moral positions.
Yeah.
Entirely through the application of reason, and that I may, in fact, may be a more moral person than he was. How is it that anything less than like a concession of every one of my points, and then him saying, I agree with him about all that, but I also think there's something else?
Well,
I always thought that presumably the point he was trying to make is that your morality comes from God, even if you don't believe in God.
Yes. Which would have been nice to have, backed up by something other than, I think this is the case.
Sure.
Well, having been to a lot of sermons in my day, I would like to say that their favorite debate tactic is to say something and even say the opposite position, so kind of the scary atheist point, and then just kind of make this wibbly wobbly, there is an answer out there to it, so don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. So I actually heard a guy being interviewed on Christian radio. I think it was the son of a famous apologist like Strobel or something.
Okay.
He's written a book for college kids, and he came on the radio, and the radio host said, okay, let me take something for your book. And then I think he picked the morality issue specifically, and he asked him some questions, and the guy gave his glib, prepared answer, and the radio host surprised me by asking follow-up questions, and the author wound up stymied. he wound up kind of floundering once the host went off script, and this was a guy who was supposed to be sympathetic to him.
The other thing that kind of kills off their immune system, not only is the years and years of not being challenged, but the entirely insular position that they have, where they're surrounded by everybody else who agrees. Nobody's going to challenge them on their beliefs. And rarely have they ever run into anyone who's willing to say anything that makes them seriously think about it. It's all, they're all just so stories.
And that's why atheism is so offensive to them, even even if it's just saying, I'm an atheist. That's why it's so offensive.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know what answer I always hear to who created God? Oh, that's stupid. That's what a child would ask. That's the only... I mean, that is seriously every what I always hear now. That's the only response.
Well, then you should probably be prepared with a Bible verse about wisdom from the mouth of babes.
Okay.
So I don't know if this was legit or not, because when, after I saw it in Feringula and went over to check it out, I couldn't verify it. But Eric Hovind was giving away, like, Valentine's DVDs.
Oh, yes.
And the word was, from Feringula, evidently... ooh, what happened? Hopefully we didn't just lose audio.
I believe PZ Myers asked everybody...
So if you went over to order it and you went from PZ Myers' page, you got this out-of-stock message. But if you cut and pasted the URL, you would get to the actual order page that didn't say out-of-stock. And PZ was saying that evidently he'd done some kind of fancy redirect.
I could do that.
So that if you were coming from Feringula or evidently some, possibly some other atheist sites.
Yeah, anytime you go to a web page, it carries a bunch of information in the header about where you've been and what browser you're using.
Yeah.
So you can just tell your server to show a different page.
But when I cut and pasted the link afterwards, I still got the out-of-stock message.
Oh, they wised up.
So either they just marked it out of stock for everybody, or they were legitimately out of stock, or this was an error, or whatever. But so anybody who was wanting your free Valentine's gift from Dr. Dino's little dinosaur, you can't have it.
What's it even about?
I can let me pop over
I mean,
here.
Why would we even want it?
Well,
I mean,
I think it's more of the
they're not that great for burning.
No. It's a free creation science evangelism DVD for you to give to your sweetie.
Well, why
hey,
would
sweetie.
You?
Oh,
now,
no.
Here's the thing. If I'd known about it and got it ahead of time, gotten there in time, yeah. I would have got that for Beth because it would have been just fun. And it's the type of DVD that I want in the collection. I want in the ACA library in much the same way that we have, you know, Passion of the Christ and... a bunch of other stuff.
That reminds, where physically is the ACA library?
Thad currently has it. I just spoke to him the other day, and we will be moving it back here into this room.
Okay.
As people look around.
Boy, I'm glad it's so accessible now.
It comes with its own shelves, and it's probably going to go right there, and we'll move that stuff somewhere else. Who knows? So atheism is spreading. Like a disease across the planet.
Oh, yeah.
Into the high schools. The Secular Student Alliance, which I will pimp until my dying day as one of the finest organizations on the planet. And it's the I'm not saying that because I'm a part of their Speakers Bureau. I'm a part of their Speakers Bureau because I already believed that. They just do stellar work working with campus groups, to help arrange events. They helped bring Russell and I up to Bradley University. And so if you need a speaking event, you're at a college, if your atheist group, your secular group, your agnostic, free-thinking, whatever group isn't already affiliated with the SSA, you definitely should look into it. But they've branched out to the high schools, which... I don't know, isn't something that everybody's particularly comfortable with, and there have been concerns about, you know, is there a sufficient number of high schoolers who are ready for the sort of backlash that they can potentially get.
Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is.
The news, though, is that in the past month, 5 new high school groups affiliated with SSA. It took 4 years to get the first 12 to join, and then they added 5 more in a month. So, Beth, you were going to chime in, I think.
These kids have got to be ready for the Constance McMillan treatment in some of these places where they're trying to get groups.
I think you're right.
Explain that, because I know I'm not familiar.
Constance McMillan was the lesbian who wanted to take her girlfriend to the prom. And
okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was a...
Yeah, she got drummed out of her school, basically, for that.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen to some of these kids. They've got to have parental support. You know, if they're not out yet, this is not going to work. It's good, but they're going to have to be careful. They're going to have to be sure they can handle it.
This is something that I'd kind of like to make sure we get out to our listeners. Obviously, the Atheist Community of Austin is a local group, although we broadcast internationally. There are a number of groups who have not really become affiliates of the ACA, but have kind of become mirror groups of the ACA. They've taken our constitution bylaws, modified them so that it suits them, and now you've got the atheist community of Topeka and Toronto and other places like that. And that's great. And there are people who are creating new shows. There was the Seattle group. Russell went up and did their show. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of others. I have been personally rather cautious in talking to high schoolers because they're minors. And I don't want to put myself in a dangerous legal position of having to deal with parents and potential lawsuits about, you know, messing with somebody else's minor children.
Yeah. I have here actually a pretty good example of what we're talking about. I remembered something I had read on Reddit earlier.
I was looking for a similar story.
Oh,
actually.
Okay. Somebody who tried to start a secular student club at high school located in the Bible Belt.
Oh, I found the same story.
Ah, beat you to it.
Read it.
Okay. Well, I mean, basically, he had a reasonably successful first meeting of about 15 people. And then he was called to the principal's office the next week. And the principal started accusing him of trying to form a hate group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I then asked where he had heard such a thing, and he informed me that more than 50 parents called regarding the situation. I then explained to him what the actual purpose of the club was. He ignored all attempts. He explained to me that he would not allow a club based on hate to be started. After running into this mental roadblock several times, I assured him that I have legal representation regarding the formation of this club. 30 minutes passed, and he finally realized that I knew exactly what he was talking about, what I was talking about, and would not be told no. But then, following my meetup with the principal, the facility sponsor we had lined up mysteriously told me she was unable to sponsor the club. When I asked for a reason, she told me that it would be a bad career move. And then the following week, the original member base pretty much went down to zero.
Yeah.
3 of my friends were threatened by their parents not to join the club.
Yeah, so this is not an easy thing. And I applaud the SSA for at least trying to reach out to those students who do have an interest in this and do want to do it. It's not going to be for everybody. It's not going to be easy. I don't doubt that, you know, our listeners who are parents would probably be supportive to the extent that they're out. There are people who are not out, and it's not always a good idea for them to come out. So there are parents who, while they wouldn't mind their kid and would actually approve of their kid participating in an organization like this, they can't be supportive because it could cost them their job in the same way this teacher couldn't, you know, this faculty member couldn't be the sponsor of the group. Mm-hmm. So what needs to happen is for the local atheist secular organizations to make themselves available. You don't have to, this doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It doesn't have to require a lot of time. But what we need to do, and we need to make sure we do it carefully, because it's not like, you don't want to risk looking like some cult group who's trying to snatch up everybody's high school kids. But you need to do what you can to be supportive of groups like this in schools in your area. And if that means, you donate some books to the library, if that means, you know, you offer your services for talks, for kind of, I participated in a panel discussion at UT, which, you know, obviously not a high school, but we had representatives from a number of different major world religions, and I was up there on behalf of the atheist point of view. Those may be the first steps that we need to take, getting more discussion where atheists are invited to the table. That may need to happen before you can actually get a student atheist group there. I don't know. And it's an area where I've been really cautious because, you know, we do all this as volunteers. I'm, you know, I'm not like I'm making any money from book sales or anything.
I wouldn't risk my job much for this. I mean, unless, or if I was worried about not being able to get another job, I guess.
Not only that, but lawsuits are expensive, even if you haven't done anything wrong. And so some parent, you know, if some parent decides to sue me, then I'm pretty much screwed.
Yeah. You mentioned the Seattle group, and I want to give them a shout out. I've been listening to, they went off, I mean, their TV station basically vanished, got its funding pulled. But they've been going, they've been plugging away as a radio show. And I've been listening to it, and I want to pass on a story that they actually bring up every week. But also check out Ask an Atheist, because they still have a podcast that's going strong, and they still invite callers. So there's this billboard campaign which claims that Jesus will return in May. There's billboards going up in Atlanta. It's and it's got a website called WeCanKnow.com, and the Christian website plans to place 50 billboards in the metro area proclaiming the rapture and Jesus's imminent return based on analysis of scripture and biblical genealogy. The Bible teaches that Christ is returning on May 21st, and we want to encourage people to go to Scripture and investigate for themselves, said Warden, who insists the Christmas time campaign, so this happened last month, is not a gimmick. All information in the Bible points to this date. God is going to be saving people right up until the last moment. Now, of course, I love it when people make specific predictions like this that have such a short time frame, because that means that you can do what our friends at Ask an Atheist have do. They've opened up their own website, WeCanKnow.com, where they have a timer counting down to backpedaling. It is counting down to May 22nd, the day after Jesus will appear, so that we can all pile on and see exactly what those people say when Jesus fails to appear on the specified date. So that's going to be fun.
Did they correct for time zones? I hope so.
Well, I mean, they gave it a whole...
Jesus only comes during the correct time zone.
They gave it a whole extra day, I guess that, okay. You know, that ought to do it.
You know, I kind of miss, didn't someone used to do...
Yes, Jeff D. used to do the Rapture Report, read off dates that had come and gone for the end of the world.
We should bring that back.
We should.
Jeff. You don't have to do it, but someone should, yeah.
Yeah, I think the website that he was getting this stuff from is not in operation anymore, but somebody ought to bring it up.
Yeah. Also, while we're doing suggestions, I would like to repeat Matt's suggestion that people donate books, because it's nice to have, you know, that stuff available, and if they can't get the books, then they can't get the info. So,
by the way, when you asked about the library, were you wanting to become the new librarian?
No, I had heard that you had Moral Oral.
We do.
And we just Netflixed the first season, but I don't really want to bother with Netflixing the other seasons.
Yep. And actually, we may have two box sets of Moral Oral, because somebody else wanted to send it to us as well.
Oh.
So I'll check on that. But yeah, we've got it.
So my opinion I've just been exposed to Moral Oral for the first time, and I don't know.
He has no background with that kind of, you know, religious raising.
I don't know how beloved the show is among atheists, but personally, I never watched Davy and Goliath, which I think is what it's satirizing.
Kinda.
I never was in the Bible Belt church-going community, so, I mean, while it's amusing satire, it's satire of something that is to me... You know, I have no context, like she
and
said.
And Russell has no empathy for other people.
That too.
Well, I liked Moral Oral when I watched it. And it's one of those kind of, I mean, it's not, you know, oh my gosh, I got to see Moral Oral. But it does have a special place in the
there
warm part of my Southern
where I
Baptist
lulled.
Heart.
I'll give it that.
Yeah. So the... Australian coast has been slammed by a cyclone. 185 mile an hour winds made landfall Thursday or so. And this could have been prevented if only the atheist prime minister, Julia Gillard, had called on God. A Christian group headed by Pastor Danny Nalaya is blaming her. It's very sad that this dark chapter in Australia's history is led by an atheist prime minister in Julia Gillard, or maybe Gillard, I'm sorry if I mispronounced it, and an openly homosexual Greens leader, both who have no regard for God nor prayer. How many more disasters will it take before our nation, starting from the prime minister, would fall on our knees and ask for God's protection and turn back to him?
I'm surprised that the gay shield wasn't enough.
Yeah, well, there haven't the devastation. The early reports that I heard were that it wasn't that bad. There hadn't been any great loss of life yet. You know, it wasn't as damaging as perhaps, you know, like Katrina was.
Okay.
So maybe the gay shield worked really well.
Well, actually, you know, I just checked, and Julia Gillard does not support gay marriage. So there's the problem. There's the real problem.
Yes. If only she had supported gay marriage,
yep,
then the magical gay shield that protected, you know, the French Quarter of New Orleans and stuff would have done a better job of protecting Australia.
Yeah, so we can come up with arbitrary stuff, too.
Plus, you know, if you live down under, well, never mind. I miss my down under friends. Mm-hmm. Beth, we got to go to Australia. We have to go because I have to go see the McAlpine clan.
You should go to New Zealand and see the places where they film Lord of the Rings.
You know what?
That would be awesome.
I searched for Rapture Report, mm-hmm, and okay, I came to raptureforums.com where I'm seeing...
Oh, no. You had me all excited.
I'm afraid this is actually a pro-Christian thing.
Yeah. Oh, you know what else would be cool?
They're reporting news that, yes, yeah, go on.
To go to New Zealand and uh-huh, find Ray Comfort's mom and ask her to fly him back home.
Okay.
We're done with him here in the United States.
Him,
can you take
him
back?
Out?
Yeah. Can you ground him, please?
Is Ray Comfort's mom? What is she?
I don't know.
I don't know. That's where he's originally
but
from.
But, I mean, that happened with that guy who lives in Canada who always messes with Thunderfoot. What's his name?
Venom Fang.
Yeah,
he's X. back, you know.
Well,
yeah,
evidently he got ungrounded.
What a surprise.
we need to contact his mom again.
Some cool stuff that happens in the Texas area. And by the way, we're I'm hitting the wrong button constantly today. We're like 7 minutes from closing this out. Cool stuff that happens in Texas on occasion. How many people in the audience are, if you're not familiar with Brother Jed, you should go looking for information about Brother Jed.
He was preaching when I was in college.
And I missed him down at UT a week or so ago, but he was also at Texas A&M. And I was contacted by Carrie Bean from the Atheist Agnostic Society, I think it is, at Texas A&M. They ran kind of a counter event. A fundraiser called Donations Against Damnations, and the goal was to raise money for the groups that that Brother Jed speaks out against. So they raised about $600, $150 from each of four groups. The Texas A&M Women's Resource Center will be purchasing more books for their library. The GLBT Aggies will be buying T-shirts reading Gay, Fine by Me. The Aggie Allies, which is a resource network of faculty and staff to provide support to GLBT students, will be able to fund more workshops. And the Agnostic and Atheist Student Group will be bringing in a guest speaker later this semester. According to Carrie, once Jed showed up, we went and held signs by him. On this day, his particular focus was on women and their place in society. And he flat out said women are only meant to be kept in the bedroom and the kitchen.
What about the hallway in between the bedroom and the kitchen?
What are you two doing in here? This is a bedroom. Used to be a bedroom. He also gave graphic descriptions of how babies are made. He also said he respects prostitutes more than girls who sleep around because at least they put a price on their body. I actually go the other way because it's not as damaging on my credit card. Lots of girls were quite...
Wait, so you prostitute yourself for free?
Yes. Okay. Because pimping wasn't easy enough.
All right.
Lots of girls were quite frustrated as the day progressed, as you can probably imagine. He also attacked homosexuality. Woo, I'm shocked. So some of the gay kids made out in front of him in response, which freaked Jed out quite a bit. Good. You deserve to be freaked out. You need to be freaked out. You need a bit of shock. Everybody needs a bit of in-your-faceness on occasion. Oh, don't do that. You can't hear it on the headphone.
Sorry.
It's something that takes a while to get used to. I don't know. Did anybody have anything else? Because I had one last thing, but it's not a big deal.
I do want to mention, bringing this back to the beginning of the show, that you can find the Texas Freedom Network's report if you look for Creationist Group Pushes Anti-Evolution Materials in Texas Science Classes. Where you will discover that the hearing is going to be in April, and it's going to involve the Foundation for Thought and Ethics, which publishes Of Pandas and People, the textbook we all know and hate. So go to them for more information, because if you are an authority on this subject, or even if you're not, you should show up and support science.
I've been getting a ton of email lately on the subject of the historicity of Jesus.
We talked about this on the last show, yeah.
Yeah. And despite talking about it, I keep getting... There seems to be a lot of confusion about what specifically my position is or why. So somebody emailed and said, hey, you know, I heard Matt say the other day that there's no supporting evidence for the historicity of Jesus. And then I was talking to a friend of mine, and he sent me a link to this video and this website, and it looks like there's a ton of evidence here, so I don't know what you're talking about. You got to be careful when you're running around talking to people that you have a good enough understanding before you go making statements, because I don't say that there's no evidence. What I said is that there's no contemporary extra-biblical evidence supporting any event specific to the life of Jesus, up to and including his very existence. In that context, contemporary means direct evidence from within his life. There are plenty of reports that begin decades later, but those aren't contemporary. No one denies these reports. No one claims that there weren't sincere believers in the mid to late first century. And I also don't assert Jesus never existed, or that we've confirmed that Jesus is nothing more than a myth, despite the fact that the bulk of life events attributed to him are almost certainly mythic.
I'll assert that, because I don't get the same email that you guys do. So you guys can send all the email you want. I won't get it.
We can change that. So
a myth.
I've even said many times that I have no problem with the claim that there was ultimately some real person at the center of those myths, but that we know absolutely nothing about that person, including their name. The problem here is that some people are asserting that it's absurd to question his existence. They're wrong. Others are asserting that it's absurd to propose that he actually existed. They're wrong. The truth is that we're reasonably justified in accepting that a real individual existed, just as we do in every other unverifiable historical context. We tend, when looking back on history, to make the assumption that when they're talking about someone and all the talk is as if this person actually existed, the presumption is that, okay, we'll presume that this individual existed. we're also justified in rejecting the mythical and supernatural claims just as we would be in any other unverifiable historical context. What does that leave us? Almost nothing. If you make a list of the claims about Jesus from the Bible, you'll find that after you get rid of everything that's mythical and supernatural, for which no ancient, anonymous, you know, testimonial evidence could ever be sufficient to justify, all you're left with is an itinerant rabbi who's traditionally been referred to as Jesus. We can't confirm the miraculous birth, the content of his sermons, any miracles, any crucifixion, any resurrection, excuse me, or any other significant event that are directly tied to him. So it kind of depends on what you're talking about when you say, did this Jesus guy exist? The mythicists, I tend to agree with, but they go, I think, too far in asserting, because all these elements are clearly identifiable as myths and would be myths in any context, they think that it's okay to say, you know, okay, this is all a myth. And what Christians take away from this is, well, you just don't even, you believe that somebody just sat down one day and invented this out of whole cloth. I heard on a Nightline.
They believe that about pretty much every other religion.
True.
So.
Yeah, I think that I listened to a Nightline or a debate or something where Deepak Chopra versus and some other priest against a preacher and the leader of the Hookers for Jesus group. And this preacher was saying, you know, he just found it more absurd to think that a bunch of people sat around one day and said, hey, we're going to invent this religion and it's going to have this, this, and this, and the only way you're going to get to heaven is to believe this. Mm-hmm. And he thought it was more likely that if people sat around and made a religion that the path to heaven would be to eat chicken wings, which is, you know, damn clever and amusing. Congratulations. But those of us who, you know, are saying that you don't have sufficient justification for your beliefs aren't sitting around asserting that somebody sat down one day and invented Christianity out of whole cloth.
Yeah, there's kind of the false dichotomy of well, I mean, it's always the false dichotomy of you either believe what I believe or you believe some ridiculously stupid thing that I attribute to.
Yeah.
To you. Like, you know, oh, you believe that people just came from monkeys, which is a gross oversimplification of how the science actually works. And you believe that some people got high and wrote down whatever bullshit came right into their head is a gross oversimplification of how the Bible works. And if you care, there are scholarly books you can read that document the actual process of coming up with these holy books, like who wrote the Bible, who wrote the New Testament.
So here's kind of my favorite example, which I've used before, and I'll knock this out real quick, and I'll be done with this subject for a while, I hope. For the believers out there, you do understand that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John weren't written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. If you don't know that much, you need to really go look into that first. But you're presuming that the idea that this isn't true is just absolutely absurd, because so many people sincerely believed it, and you think that these reports of miracles are sufficient to justify your belief that they existed. You can interview people today who will give you firsthand detailed accounts of their alien abductions. They'll point you to other people who will claim similar experiences, and their stories will share many key details, and they'll generally be more consistent than the Easter story in the Bible. Would you believe them? Should any of us believe them? If we aren't justified in accepting alien abduction stories, and I don't think we are, when we can actually speak to the claimants and collect many consistent accounts, how could we ever be justified in believing translations of copies of hearsay accounts by anonymous authors? We couldn't. Moreover, the Christian God, if it exists as represented, that God would clearly understand this epistemological quandary and would take steps to rectify it.
Yep.
The Christian God is internally contradictory, creating a situation of immeasurable importance with the intent of converting everyone at all times, and then failing to provide evidence sufficient to the task. This, to me, is as ironclad confirmation that the Christian God, as presented, absolutely does not exist as anything else that could possibly be.
You know, they really want to have it both ways. They want to say that the lack of definitive proof is evident, you know, is because God wants you to have faith so much. But they will jump on anything that looks like definitive proof if they can get at it. So, I mean, you know, the answer that they would make was, of course, God doesn't show you that stuff. Because that would remove the need for faith.
Yeah.
Even as they grasp at every straw they can find to say that there is obviously perfect proof and it takes more faith to be an atheist.
Yeah, well, that, which Bill O'Reilly said too.
God rewards your faith with information. So you need the faith first and then you get the info.
Yeah.
Anyway. Ah.
You just need to believe.
It's a it's an ingenious system, really.
Yeah. All right. Well, since people have other oh, go ahead.
Well, were you going to move to something else?
No.
You were going to end it? I want to do one last thing that's not about Christianity, because I know we get a lot of, you just focus on Christians. So, a drug-crazed father in Papua New Guinea has been accused of trying to eat his newborn baby in a witchcraft ceremony. Which, I mean, witchcraft could still be Christian, but typically it's not. So, he was carrying out some sort of sorcery ritual or initiation to become part of a special society. I don't know if that's a society I would want to be a part of that includes eating your newborn baby. He had a history of drug abuse, which, I mean, that didn't help. But what was pretty cool about this was that his neighbors heard the baby screaming and they chased the man all the way to the police station. Where he was detained. So I'm really proud of those neighbors for banding together.
Go people of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah,
although, you know, it does mean that if you hear a screaming baby next door, you know, maybe you should check on it from time to time.
Check it out.
You know, and not just turn your TV up and bitch about how the neighbors can't control their little brat. Run next door and make sure he's not being eaten as part of a ceremony to get into a secret society.
Or being drowned. It's part of that water.
Well, you won't hear the screaming then, just kind of quiet gurgles.
Well, I mean, no, there's this other Christian thing that's popular.
Baptism?
No, I'm sorry. Among Mormons. You spank the baby.
Yes.
And then it cries, and then you hold it underwater, and then you take it out and spank it more, and you keep repeating this until the baby stops crying. And it's this Christian thing. It's kind of weird. It's in, like, Mormonism, so that could be going on, too.
Wow, what a downer to end the show on.
You're welcome.
People killing babies.
I'm sorry, then I'll have to go with one last story just to bring it back up.
Thank you.
Close
Good
us up.
News, everyone. You can't buy the Pope's organs.
Ooh, which ones?
Any of them.
Oh,
because,
man.
You see, according to the Vatican, if the Pope happens to be sainted after he dies, then you could be walking around with holy relics in your body, and we can't have that.
Wow. And see,
could you imagine, though, if your body did have a holy relic? I mean, you would be afraid that people would constantly be coming after you.
Steal you?
I don't know, man. They would want to touch you so that you would heal them. You wouldn't be able to sleep.
Might be a good way to get dates.
You sign the form. We're here for your liver. I think there's a grand irony here that the Pope can't give his organs to anybody, and yet he's protecting people who want to stick their organs in everybody else.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I went there.
Burn.
I'm not afraid. I guess I should go after Scientologists more. Yeah, we're done. The plan is to be back next week, barring any catastrophes. And on that note, I know there was something else I was supposed to remind everybody of, but I'll just try and remember it and mention it on tomorrow's TV show.
So, I'm on tomorrow's TV show.
Are you on tomorrow?
Yeah.
Cool. Then we'll have tomorrow off, sweetie.
You can tell me.
We'll find out. We'll find out after the show who's doing what tomorrow, and we'll see you all next week.
Hey there, brother. Don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. Don't tell me life doesn't hurt, and that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't